You're listening to Mary's Touch Radio. Our program is entirely listener-supported through generous donations from listeners like you. Discover and explore our entire archive of inspirational content at marystouch.org. And thank you for your support.
Mary's Touch, real life stories of Mary's love.
I really do feel that Mary had a role in bringing me back to the Catholic Church.
He reminded me that Mary was my mom.
I always fell upon, if I needed a desperate prayer, I always called to Mary.
I could see that Mary had a hand in this.
She began to speak to my heart.
Mary's Touch, real life stories of Mary's love.
Hi, this is Sherry Lamonte.
And I'm Father Jim Evans.
Welcome to Mary's Touch, the show that brings you real-life stories of Mary's love. You're listening to and learning about Mary, the mother of Jesus. We have a treat in store for everyone today. Father, I know you're going to really enjoy talking with Carol Collins. And our relationship with Carol goes back at least 8 years when we did a story with her for Mary's Touch. And she told us about starting a home for young children in India at that time. And it was a special home for special children because all the children were HIV babies.
Well, it's my understanding that Carol was asked by a priest friend of their family to go to India and start a home for those children who were abandoned by their parents. And Carol agreed to go and stay for 1 year. And what made the priest ask her to take on such a huge undertaking? Well, Carol mentioned that she has a degree in biology, so she could understand what doctors were telling her when she took the children in for checkups. And with her MBA, she was able to financially start and run a home and make it grow. But that's only a part of it. Why does a young woman take on such a challenge? And indeed, how can she? Well, this was a calling. A calling is very special. So let's catch up with Carol, who is a remarkable woman, and find out what she did in only 7 years' time.
Oh, let's welcome Carol to Mary's Touch. We're glad you're here with us today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Carol, when I spoke with you the other day, I tell you what, I was, you know, I think I do a lot in life. Well, you know, nothing compared to what you have done in the last 7 or 8 years having to do with the home for HIV children in India. And so before we get into your later years, can you kind of catch everybody up on, you know, this calling that you had, actually a call from a priest and going to India and what you were faced with when you got there?
Sure. I had been asked by this priest, Father Dominic. He was a French priest who had been kind of all over the world starting different monasteries and staying there for a couple of years and then would be sent to a different country and then a different one. And he ended up in India. And in order to build the monastery, the bishop told him, but you need to have some kind of service. And so Father Dominic decided to start an AIDS hospice. And after several years, people wanted to send him children who were also HIV positive and had either lost their parents or had just been completely abandoned by the community. And so he asked me, I've known him for several years, and he said, Carol, can you come over and run this? And I thought it was really interesting because, you know, I'm from Texas. I don't speak the language there, and I'm not a doctor or a nurse. But for some reason, he had confidence that this was the right thing to do. And so he asked me, and I really prayed about it, you know, for several months. And someone told me, you know, Carol, God doesn't call the equipped. God equips the call, and you've been called, and you should say yes to this. And once I said yes, everything fell into place. I rented my house within 2 weeks. I wrapped up my job. I mean, it was definitely God just making the path, all the practical stuff, very easy. And that just kind of reaffirmed that it was the right decision to make. When I got to India, it was a bit overwhelming because immediately I had 13 children who, out of them, only one of them spoke some English. And none of them had been in school for at least 1 year, sometimes more than that. And we had no relationships with the schools or some really good doctors. And so when I first got there, my first initiative was to get them in a good Catholic school. I wanted them to learn English so we could communicate, and then also so that they could learn from the brothers and the priests that were also living in the community, because I knew that they would provide the stability that these children didn't have. And so other things that were minor, you know, the weather, the food, all, you know, the lack of communication with the U.S., all those things were minor compared to, you know, the bigger issues that I was facing. But I never felt alone during that time. I always felt like, you know, that Mary was right there with me, that God had called me over to India through Father Dominic. And so I knew it was the right place to be and to just do the best I could, and he would make it work out.
So you had the total care of these children from, were some of them infants and then some of a little older age?
I know, just from the toddler side. So usually the infants, sometimes there was the hospice, because they had nursing care all around the clock, they had the infants. And then usually when a child was around 3 or 4, they would shift over to my home. Sometimes those infants that they were taking care of, they were just waiting to see if the child would eventually test negative. Because the testing in India, it would take at least 6 months to determine whether or not the child had HIV. And so they would wait during that time. And most of the time, the babies that they had were fortunately negative. So basically at around age 2 or 3, they would come over into my care. And I had a lot of great help, two wonderful cooks who prepared a lot of healthy food for the kids 5 times a day, because they have snacks as well. We knew that having the children, we wanted to grow them up in a family environment. And so we had women who were involved, but also men, because they were going to learn from men, number one, how to treat women. They were going to learn, you know, how to be independent, how to care for themselves, all these things. And so it was really a team effort to provide a community that was very family-like. We were very different from other Indian orphanages because they separate boys and girls. We had our children eat together, study together, pray together, and play together, because we felt that it was important. They knew they had that support from each other.
When you received these children, it was obvious that, you know, you were connected with some priests and that it was very Catholic. Were you in a primarily Hindu section of India, and how did the religion factor into that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it was definitely a Hindu environment. There are many Catholic schools throughout all of India, and people from all different faiths, Hindus, Muslims, and Christians would go to these Catholic schools because they were generally, you know, such a high quality. The reason we felt that it was important to raise the children in the Catholic faith, though, is because we knew that it was going to be the only stable thing in their life. So some of them had already lost their mother, their father, their grandparents, or sometimes they had very abusive relatives. And, you know, they would live at their house and they would go to another person's house. I mean, they had just been tossed around for so long that having, you know, the faith, knowing that God would never, ever reject them, no matter if they had done something wrong or even who they were with, you know, having this HIV status, they had been rejected by the whole community. And we were teaching them that God is loving and God is merciful and he's kind, and that they didn't receive this disease out of some kind of punishment or hatred. And this is a little different than their religion of the community, right? The, you know, Hinduism, you have this reincarnation, and people treated HIV people or AIDS patients with this idea that, well, they deserve that. You know, that's the justice of God, that they get that. And so when people would meet the children, sometimes they had in their mind that these children deserve that. And so we raised them in this Catholic community, undoing all of that and saying, no, that's not right. So we would say the rosary together. I had them go to Mass at least 3 times a week. For the children that had no parents, no relatives, nothing, and there was no way that somebody would come contact us, we did have them baptized, first communions, you know, confession, all of the sacraments. because we felt that was really important. Now, if a child did have some connection with their family, you know, whether it was their grandparents or an aunt or uncle, then we respected the religion and didn't, they would still come to Mass with us, but we didn't have them receive any of the sacraments. And we said, okay, you know, while we're praying, you pray to your God. And we, at the, I think the last 2 years I was there, we accepted our first young Muslim boy who was practicing, and we helped him, you know, with his diet during Ramadan and things like that. So we were encouraging of their current religion if their family was practicing, and if not, then we raised them in a Catholic environment. And especially the role of Mary was so important because these children had lost their mothers, and I wasn't their mother. I'm a good aunt, and I'm there to care for them, and I did everything I could. But, you know, the reality is I'm an American who would probably end up going home, and so I always taught them to pray to Mary as their mother. And I also found great solace in Mary. At first, I struggled with that because I thought, well, Jesus must have been a perfect child, right? He wasn't at school getting into fights, or, you know, he wasn't vomiting all over the, you know, the classroom. But then I realized, no, she saw her son suffer so much, and she embraced that. And I felt like I was seeing these children suffer, and I could be in a relationship with Mary where she would understand that kind of suffering.
Oh, the suffering must have been, well, it is. Anytime we're around people, and you were around people, and you developed a love for them, and you had an immediate affiliation with a church which teaches love, and so you saw suffering, and it's a strain, it's a drain, and you're a very strong woman to do all of this, and I know that you will immediately attribute all of that to your relationship with our loving God and the strength that comes from all of the angels and saints that God puts out there for us. Mm-hmm. So I would love to have you tell some of your personal anecdotes, if you don't mind sharing one or two, of facing the strain of seeing the suffering and where you turned to get that inner strength to endure and to help.
I think it was definitely a special grace that I had while I was there, as far as, for example, patience, endurance, just the amount of, you know, work that's required to kind of even have the physical strength to keep going. So during the time I was there, we lost three children, you know, to cancers or a brain that virus had attacked the brain, and one small girl. But one Christmas, and I always made a big deal about Christmas and really decorated in a big Western style, which was fun. But we had a great tree. You know, I bought a fake tree, and I bought some ornaments from Hobby Lobby when I'd come back to the States and bring them over, and the kids would decorate them. And they were so proud of our Christmas tree. And it was in this one kind of room where we prayed, and we also had a library and kind of our catch-all room. And in that room, we had two pictures of the children we had lost, Jody and Govindan. And they were facing out towards where everybody could see them. But one evening I came and I noticed that the pictures were turned a different direction. And I thought, oh, that's funny. So I turned them back. And then the next day, I saw the same thing. The pictures were turned away from where they normally are. And I thought, okay, so it wasn't a mistake the first time. Somebody's turning them. And it was really important to me that the kids saw that after these two children had passed away, that they were being remembered. You know, I think that's a fear of everybody. When you die, who cares? Who's going to remember? And I wanted to show these children that whether they're on earth or in heaven, we're one family, we're one body, we're all together. And so like one evening we were saying the rosary together and we're praying, I forget. And so I said, you know, so somebody's turning the pictures of Jody and Govindan. Does anybody know what's going on or who's turning the pictures? And this little boy, who I think he was around 9 years old at the time, he said, yeah, Auntie, I wanted them to see our beautiful Christmas tree.
Oh, so, my. Oh,
yeah,
my.
Each night, he, you know, I would turn him one way, not realize, and he would turn him the other way. And after that, of course, I never turned them again. And it just made me realize this connection that we have with people that we've lost and that they're with us and they're looking over us. And again, that's something they wouldn't have found in a Hindu religion. But in a Christian religion, you have that kind of comfort and that faith that exists.
Boy, they were really grabbing hold of I am the way and the truth and the life and the meaning of life everlasting. That's a beautiful story.
Well, and how the children changed. How did your life change?
I think my life changed pretty dramatically. I had been working in Houston for a couple years, and I'm single and I had no children. And so I didn't realize how selfish I had become. You know, I eat when I wanted to eat. I would go out when I wanted to go out. And when you have kids, your whole life changes. You have to reorder your life around them. And you do it not out of duty, but out of love, because you want them to be happy. You want them to be healthy. And you know that you can't impair yourself in any way that would affect them. And so it really made me turn outwards and away from myself, which is exactly what Christ wants us to do, right? Mm-hmm. So it was a very important growth process for me to go through. And I know that mothers and fathers do that every day, you know, here and in India, or, you know, all over the world, if you're in that family environment.
But that doesn't happen overnight. You know, we have 9 months to get ready for this. But you just went, and then you had these children immediately. I mean, how did you handle that?
It was hard. I mean, and Father Dominic was a great support. There were times where, you know, the kids would do something wrong, and I thought, oh, my gosh, they're going to grow up to be thieves or, you know, hurt somebody. And he was always so reassuring, because he would always see the good in the children. And so that kind of reassurance, that confidence. And then we really made a conscious effort to give them to Christ and to say, you know, God has protected these children this far. The things that they had gone through, I had one young girl who came when she was around 8, and her mother was HIV positive and at that point had full-blown AIDS, and so tried to commit suicide and also poison the young girl. And luckily they were both saved, and then a little while later the little girl's mother died. But just turning the children over to God and Christ was the best thing that we could do. I think as far as it happening overnight, my heart was ready to give all. I think once you say yes, it's not just yes, I'll come over, but I won't do this, or I won't do that, I won't do that. When I said, yes, I'll come, it was, ask me to do whatever you want me to do, and I will say yes. And if that's cleaning up vomit off the floor, or if that's taking them to the beach, or if it's getting up at 6 a.m. even though I'm tired, I had said yes. And I think once doing that, I think sometimes, of course, it was physically difficult, but I think Mary helped me through that. Christ helped me through that.
Carol, as you were confronted with this disease, HIV, and the results of it that all of these children were experiencing, what was the primary cause of the spread of the HIV? Was it as an STD, or was it through drug use, needle sharing, or what?
Yeah, unfortunately, most of our children, their fathers were drivers. In India, they drive for hours and days and months, and they're away from their families for long amounts of time. So in most cases, that's what happened. The father would pick up the disease from a prostitute and bring it into the family. Hmm. And there came a point when I had some teenage girls, about 3 of them, and we would have a girls' night every once in a while. And I wanted them to know the truth. I wanted them to understand, you know, this is how the disease is spread, because there's a lot of superstition around it. And so we talked about it. And the other amazing thing I learned from these young children is forgiveness. They knew, or they became to understand that their fathers had brought this terrible disease into their families, but they were still forgiving, so forgiving of their fathers. Mm-hmm. There was one or two cases where the mothers had been prostitutes or, you know, living on the street. And then there was one or two cases where we suspect there had been a shared needle, but it wasn't because of drug use. It was because of a health center in the small villages. Sometimes they don't have the right information, and so they're giving shots, you know, without using clean needles.
Right.
Sure. You know, before we run out of time, what I was so amazed at with is, Carol, when you went and there was one home, and when it was time for you to be doing something else in your life and you came home, tell our listeners, when you left, the expansion that had happened since you had started in that one home, coming that one day and being an immediate auntie to all.
Well, when I first went there, the Red Cross had donated funds to build one home for children. And so we started with that. Then we had 3 to 4 times as many boys as we did girls. And that is just because of the preference in India for a boy child. And so if you have a little baby who's sick and it's a male child, you're more likely to take that baby to the doctor. Whereas if it was a female child, the parents were letting the baby pass away. So that's why we had more male children than we did female. And so we started to have, you know, these boys started to grow up and they were teenagers. And so we decided to build a separate home for them down the road a little bit. And we're trying to prepare them for living an independent life. You know, this is a chronic disease. It's not a death sentence. And these children could live long and healthy lives as long as they took care of themselves, but they needed to learn how to do that. So there was a home for teenage boys that was built. Currently, there's about 15 boys living there, young men, I should say. And so they would shift over to that house when they were around 13 years old. We also had some children who had learning disabilities, severe physical disabilities, and we wanted them to be as independent as possible. And so we created a 4-acre coconut farm, which also had space for animals and for, you know, growing vegetables and things like that, so that they could work on that farm and produce some kind of income, you know, have some dignity in their daily life from work. And so that was also created. And then one of the most important things that we built was a home for toddlers. And this is because some of these young little ones were at this AIDS hospice, and it was not the best environment for them. And so we built a special home for them and then created a Montessori preschool for them so that they could learn English. In their early lives, they didn't have very good interaction, very good care. And so this was a way to kind of catch them up to their peers. It was all through the generosity of individual donors. You know, families would make a donation from all over the world. We had volunteers from Mexico, New Zealand, France, the United States. And so we were very blessed that way, that financially we didn't have to worry about it, but we could put our focus on the children.
Oh, what I'm hearing is your yes, and then where God led you and what God had you do, and your continued, yes, God, here I am, your servant. And the reason I wanted you to tell people what you had done and the we in this, which we all understand, and how it had grown. Here's another beautiful story. Here's the proof, so to speak, that when you say your yes, God does open doors, and you do get to hopefully complete a plan that you had, and you can give your all, as you said, whether it's cleaning up the floors or making sure that someone with a disability has a way to stay honorable in their life and earn a living. Carol, I'm so happy to hear the story of someone who says yes and be an example for the rest of us that when you say, here I am, your servant, Mary, you said yes, I'm going to say my yes. What unbelievable, wonderful things can happen.
Yeah, I think God is so good that way. You know, he just rewards not just you, but also everyone around you when you say yes. And I thank Father Dominic for even proposing it. I mean, sometimes you have people come into your life and they are the medium through which, you know, God speaks to you. So we can all be that for each other sometimes.
And being in an area where Christianity is not the norm, did you observe and experience that the Christianity that they were being taught, exposed to, and actually brought into, to be something that stayed with them, or were they so influenced by the culture around them that you found them not being as influenced as we think they might benefit from?
Well, I think the great thing about the Indian environment is that their religion is built into their daily life. So there are temples all over the place, and people will stop on their way to work and receive a blessing from the priest, or if they buy a new motorcycle, they'll go and take it and get it blessed. You know, it's so incorporated into their lives. And so what was beautiful about seeing Christianity in India is that it was incorporated into their daily life, all these different actions that we don't necessarily do. You know, maybe mm-hmm. we go to Mass, but then we walk out of that building and we forget that we're Christian. And there I felt it was a little more visible, and sometimes that was just for show, but you can take the genuineness of it and make it good. I think the area that they might be lacking is the depth of the teachings of the church and the history and the saints. You know, they're just now starting to recognize some different Indian Christian saints, whereas we have this rich history of all the different, you know, different European saints and all the. So there is this difference that I saw, and while it may be more simple, it was definitely more incorporated into their daily life.
Carol, thank you. Thank you for being with us today. And we'll keep you and all the children in our prayers. And this might be a good time to remind everybody that Mary's Touch has a prayer ministry request. So send your prayer requests to Mary's Touch. And you do that by sending your request to www.marystouch.org. And we look forward to receiving your prayer requests, which we pray for individually. And Carol, we will pray for you and keep you and what your next calling will be. And of course, all your children in India in our prayers.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you, Carol. And we ask God's blessings upon your work. We ask the blessings of God upon all of the children, all the lives that you have touched. And we ask God's blessings upon all of us in this wonderful world that we've been created into. In the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. Amen.
Amen.
This program is produced by Mary's Touch, a nonprofit corporation dedicated to bringing you the love of Mary and her Son Jesus. If you have questions, comments, or a story to share, write to us at Mary's Touch, P.O. Box 341991, Austin, Texas, 78734, or email radio@marystouch.org. For more stories or to find out more about Mary, visit our website at marystouch.org.
You're listening to Mary's Touch Radio. Our program is entirely listener-supported through generous donations from listeners like you. Discover and explore our entire archive of inspirational content at marystouch.org. And thank you for your support.